Okay, so here we are, the last night of our Akash series. We had a really interesting discussion the first hour, I think, just going over all of these qualities that we've been talking about for 6 weeks now, 5 weeks. Tonight we'll make it six. And really looking at how we would incorporate them into our lives, how really interdependent they are. The point came up just how we could perfect any one of them, then the others would naturally be there, that they're so interconnected that it would be impossible to be practicing perfect kindness and be living without integrity and so on and so forth. It was Chinnabar made the point, and I think he's right, you could take any one of these qualities and just work on it for a year. I want to say tonight is really a perfect ending for this class. Ramurti will talk in just a few minutes about magnetism, which is really what all of this is all about, is really becoming more magnetic, and how do we raise our energy in order to increase our magnetism, which we'll get to hear about one way or another this evening. But as I was saying earlier, the Swamiji wrote these teachings, they're deceptively simple. They look deceptively simple. You can talk about kindness or integrity or honesty at such a simple and easy level, I think the way most of the world does, and they're still very good qualities. It's always good to be kind in any way. It's always good to be truthful, always good to be honest. But he's taken these very simple concepts. It's not like he's talking to us about the eight attributes or the eight manifestations of purely divine energy, those things that just get harder and harder to talk about. And yet, he has created a way for us to think about all of them very specifically and particularly as they pertain to our spiritual lives, as ways that we can help ourselves grow spiritually. And I think our job, and I was noticing this as we were talking, because it's very easy to get into a kind of discussion about it where, for all of us, where we speak about it as if we are still approaching it, not just from an ego-centered self, which is how many of us live much of the time, but from our emotional selves. And the distinction doesn't stay clear. And we were saying at the end of that class, and I think it's important to remember, you can't learn these lessons from an emotional place. They're mutually exclusive. Just like, as we were saying earlier, you cannot stay angry at somebody or stay judgmental of them if you're choosing to love them fully. It's an antidote. You just can't do it. Neither can you really learn these lessons and expect that you're going to bring them down, if you will, or over, or whichever direction you're heading, into the emotionally based life that most people live. They don't work there. You can't stay non-judgmental. You can't stay non-attached. You can't stay kind when your ego's involved. That's what we're all doing on this spiritual path, is we're trying to transcend the ego and look at the world from a spiritual perspective and ask always of ourselves, how are we going to use these qualities to help us grow spiritually and to become a different bar, no matter what environment we're in, so that we're not meeting people at an emotional plane, but we are inviting them just by our behavior, by our actions, by our reactions, to join us in a much more uplifted state. And it's, again, it's so subtle that we could miss it. So I just wanted to remind us of what is the container that we're holding this in. These are for deeply devoted devotees and yogis who are looking to grow spiritually. Can anybody learn from them? Of course, just like every lesson that we do, every class we give, every Sunday sermon we give, wherever you are, there's something you can learn. But as I look around the class and we see who's here, I want to say, remember what we're trying to do with it. We're using these as spiritual tools. And I actually will talk a little more about that later, what it means really specifically to always be bringing the energy up to the point between the eyebrows, so that it's from that place that we're holding everything that we've talked about. Okay, so for right now, let me just let Ramurti come and speak.
Okay, so magnetism. It's one of my favorite subjects, which is fortunate since I'm talking about it. Although I did have the thought, when that thought came to me, that really, whatever I'm talking about, that probably should be my favorite subject. Like Winnie the Pooh and Piglet were walking along, Winnie the Pooh is enjoying the colors of the flowers and the green and the grass and the foliage and all, and he's just absorbed, and he asks Piglet, "What day is it, Piglet?" And Piglet, being a little shy of gray matter, takes a little while and then says, "Why, I believe it's today." And Piglet says, "Ah, my favorite day." So that actually pertains to magnetism, if I remember to refer to it. We'll get back there. But so this is my favorite topic for now. Master says, and I don't remember hearing this before I was preparing for this, but he says that every physical law has been manifested from a metaphysical law. And he gives the example of Newton's action and reaction, and then talks about karma, how karma is the very same thing on the spiritual level rather than on a physical level. So that's very true for magnetism as well. The kind of magnetism we're the most familiar with may be the iron bar from science class in sixth grade or something. And, you know, you have a piece of iron, one that's magnetized, one that's not. You put them together and you see the transfer of the magnetism from one to the other. And there's another type, which is electromagnetism, where we take the wire, the copper wire, and wind it around the piece of metal. And then we shoot energy through it. And the rate of the energy and the strength of it affects how much magnetism there is. And of course, that's the basic concept behind electric motors, I think. Not being strong in that area, but that's what I understand. And we have magnetism of that sort. We also have magnetism of the Earth. The Earth has a solid core, primarily metal core, and then the outer core, not the crust, but the outer core of the Earth is liquid, and it's revolving around that core in the middle, which creates magnetism. And in the case of the Earth, it's very important, actually. We wouldn't be here otherwise. The magnetism is called the magnetosphere, and it's all around the Earth, and it protects us from gases and from particles that otherwise would come in and destroy the atmosphere. So these three things right away, where we have magnetism by association, and we have magnetism to the degree of energy that is going through the wires, and this protective function of magnetism, are all true for us as well. And we'll talk about each of those in a little bit. But other things have magnetism too, you know, beyond these less sentient things. Plants, we know now, have magnetism. Lower animals do. There were some interesting experiments in Northwestern where when they created a magnetic field, artificial magnetic field around snails, snails started acting very differently and going off in different types of patterns than they did when they just had the Earth's magnetic field to guide and direct them. And of course, we think birds, you know where to fly because of that, and so on. And in higher animals as well, magnetism is evident. Swami talks about a man that he knew who was an animal trainer. He was a small man and not real buff and muscular, but he had so developed, Swami said, whether this is good or not, he had so developed his magnetism to relate to animals that even when he was in a zoo or at another circus, if he walked by a lion or a tiger, it would retreat to the opposite end of the cage with its tail between its legs. I'm not sure I made that part up, but you get the image anyway. And was terrified of him just because he was there. He was exuding the kind of magnetism he had developed to train and work with the animals that he usually worked with. And of course, we have the magnetism of the human consciousness, which is more what we're interested in. The amazing thing about magnetism is that we are who we are, we have what we have, we are where we are, we're with whom we're with, because of the magnetism that we've developed in this lifetime and over the other lifetimes. So you can kind of look at this and say, that's it, magnetism, that's it. That's what it's all about. That's what the path's about. That's what life is about. That's what all these things are about, because it's the magnetism that we have that allows us to either do or not do what we're trying to do, whatever that is, whatever that is. Yogananda said, each human being is a bundle of magnets. Every body part is a magnet, and especially the parts that come in pairs. Again, I never heard this. The eyes, the ears, not the mouth. All the rest of the parts that have are couples are especially powerful magnets. And he doesn't go on and say why, but I imagine it has something to do with two of them and polarity and all that, although that's just a guess. He also said that soul magnetism, and these are just little bits for free on the side here. He also said that soul magnetism is very visible, very perceivable through the eyes, that it's expressed through the eyes, whether it's strong or weak. And if you're able to relate to get into a person through their eyes, you should be able to tell about their magnetism, based on their own spiritual development. And that some people are so highly developed, and I'm assuming that's the masters primarily, though he didn't say that, so they can just look at a person and heal them with the energy that they can focus from their eyes, or transform them in other ways. So that's really interesting, I found, about the eyes. Swami had a friend who had a companion, a close friend, who went to India, lived there for years and years, remotely studied with advanced yogis. And he came back at one point for a visit to this country to Swami's friend. And he felt that while he was here, maybe he should try to be of some sort of service to the society here, some sort of civil service. I see a couple grins, so a couple people may know this story. So he went to the LA police force, and he told them that he had some skills that he would be willing to share with them that would probably help protect them and help them to be able to do their jobs better, and began to describe it in ways that must have been esoteric and not very cop-like. And they started laughing at him. And soon they were ridiculing him. And he said, okay, fine, that's fine. But I just want to tell you that none of you can touch me. None of you can take me down. None of you can do anything to me at all. And this they understood, right? They could relate to this. And so it's all right, let's get him. And one by one, they attacked him. And when they got about within 6 inches of him, however they were attacking them, they were rebuffed and they went unconscious and fell down. And when he left the police station without another word, there were 15 cops spread out on the floor. This was because of his highly developed magnetism. I'm not sure that's the most practical use for us, but at least it really makes a point. So it's important to first understand, I think, that magnetism is neutral. It's independent. It's not good. It's not bad, as we usually think of those things. It's just a law, like gravity. If you're really trying to get something from a high place to a low place that's really heavy, gravity can help you. But if you're standing in that spot and and it's coming down, then, you know, so one is good and one is bad. But it's really not that gravity is good or bad. And it's that same way with magnetism. It's just a law that operates, and then it's up to us how we want to use it, whether we're going to let something be dropped on us, as with gravity, or whether we're going to use it to our best advantage. So it's really, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, GIGO or GIGO, the G-I-G-O, you know, it's like if you put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. If you put great things in, you're going to get great things out. And that's the nature of magnetism. Negative emotions and negative thoughts will attract negative experiences. That's just it. That's a part of the way the law works. Yogananda said, fear creates a malignant magnetism by which a person attracts the very object of his fear, as a case in point. And, you know, we've come to understand that generally. I mean, just even people in the kind of positive thinking, you know, a little bit new age realm, you know, understand that. And Master was very specific about it. Interestingly said that the magnetism of humility attracts protection. If you're humble, you will attract the protection of saints and masters. So that's fun. So this is the basis of the whole concept of, well, what you have is really yours. I mean, some people may put it like, you get what you deserve, but let's look at that law a little different way, which is what we have is ours. You know, we can't really have something come into our lives and affect us that isn't ours because we've asked for it. Now, you hear that phrase around and on quite a bit. Well, you must have asked for it. And, you know, you don't have to ask for it with your mind. So it doesn't have to be a mental, a rational thing. And you, of course, we get many things we haven't consciously asked for. But it's not only because of past karma. It's because the way of we're living our lives now. And we are attracting to us whatever it is we're getting. And, of course, past lives as well have their impact on that. From the very moment that I sometimes think of as sparkification or chipification, when we left God, that little chip of God, that little spark of God, whatever your own metaphor is it, but from that very beginning, we started creating the magnetism that we have now. As we discriminated, even on the causal world, not that I know a lot about that, but right from our soul's creation, we've started generating magnetism. And like I said, that's what it's all about, really. I mean, this is a great filter, a great lens through which to see what's going on in our lives. So right from the very beginning, we started making decisions, making choices that have brought us to where we are now. So we're going to talk most of the time. Is it most of the time? I think. If my fingerprint will work, yes. Oh, half the time gone. Okay. So I want to talk about the ways we can influence, increase, decrease, change, mold, you know, bloom our magnetism. Now, this, like many of these topics, deserves about a 6 or 8 week course, you know, of 3 hours of each class. And we don't have that, obviously, tonight. However, it just happens to be that beginning next Wednesday night, there is a class on creating an abundant life. And guess what the major element of creating an abundant life is? Very good. You're such a great class. Magnetism. So if you want to know more about magnetism, we're going to have, you know, a practicum. We're not going to do postures at such, but we're going to start at 6. And so we'll have theory, you know, how things work, but we'll also really emphasize the techniques that you can use to develop and control and work with your magnetism. That's just a 3 week class, so it's the Wednesdays, the rest of October. Okay, so I'm just going to bounce off some of these, or else we won't get through. I guess I have about a minute each. Concentration, Yogananda said, is everything. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, some of you don't have the blessing of having to teach blessing. Am I saying that out loud? But, you know, when you get into this, you discover things that you never saw before. At least I do. So Master said, concentration is everything. in development and growth and pursuing our goals. And that if we have fully focused attention on anything, we can achieve it or we can become it. And that things taking us in the opposite direction are absent-mindedness, self-doubt, inferiority complex. These block the energy. Guilt, this sort of thing, which is interesting having them juxtaposed against concentration. I wouldn't have come up with that myself, but that's what interferes with concentration, Master says. Magnetism is really based on a flow. There has to be a flow, or the magnetism will decrease, good or bad. And so if you want to have your magnetism be strong, you have to think in terms of keeping the energy flowing, of keeping, Master talks about gratitude and gratitude moving into generosity, and generosity creating an environment where, if you get more back from that, it's going to be easier to be grateful. So there's this whole magnetic flow through giving and generosity and gratitude, the Master talks about. Willpower is another key, using our willpower. The greater the willpower, the greater the flow of energy, right? And then Swami says specifically, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism. So there's lots of ways that we can work with energy. And again, I've just got enough time to mention them now rather than have us all do exercises together. Related to energy, though, is something to keep in mind is enthusiasm, because there's a direct connection between the two. Now, we'll go into that story, but if you come to one of the classes, you're going to be able to find out about somebody who can totally change his life just on wild and crazy enthusiasm. And the book he wrote, yeah. Well, I'm going to save it now that I said I would. But actually, the book that he wrote about enthusiasm is still number 20 on Amazon. I checked it today. It's number 20 in books on selling and sales, enthusiasm, and number 3,000 overall of all books that Amazon sells. So amazing. And oh, I should say, because I didn't tell the story, you didn't get this. He wrote it in 1946. And it's still up there. So that's a great story. If you're not going to come to the abundance class, I'll sneak it in a sermon or something sometime when you have the chance to do it. Self-control. Controlling the physical senses, control of the emotions will generate magnetism. Master says emotionalism, what he calls emotionalism, which means basically out of control emotions, I think, or indulgence in emotions, is demagnetizing specifically. And the opposite that he counterpositions there is even-mindedness. Now here's one interesting one that we all can relate to one way or another, and that is part of a big group called intake. But first of all, intake very literally with food, our diet. One of the key reasons that yogis move towards vegetarianism is because of the effect of meat on your magnetism. Of course, the animal flesh has animal magnetism, but also in most situations where animals are being eaten, they have been slaughtered in a less than supportive, kind environment. So they have the vibration of fear, maybe the vibration of anger, Swami says. And when we take that into ourselves, some of that energy, that vibration, remains in the people who have eaten it. So it's just another thing that drops your magnetism in a negative direction instead of a positive direction. Fruit, the spiritual qualities of fruit, right? So, bananas for humbleness and grapes for love, and you probably know them better than I do, cherries for cheerfulness, and that's a thing we'll get into in that class too, but you could look those up and see if there are some qualities that you're trying to develop. Indulge yourself in the fruits and try to develop those. And in thinking about this, I had the idea, I've always kind of wondered about microwaves, and using microwaves, and CETA is absolutely, totally death on it, so we don't use it, but I've tried to figure it out, and I know there's EMFs or EFMs or whatever they are, that, you know, there's that. But I wonder, if you take the molecules in something that you're going to eat, and you just rev them up, you know, as high as you can, and they're dancing like crazy so that there's heat generated, I wonder what that does to the vibration of them. You know, then you take them into you. So maybe there's a vibratory issue, at least, if not more, with eating things that you put in the microwave. Anyway, that's another free one. Another thing about intake, or related to it, is the cleanliness of the body. And Master, you know, went on quite a bit about that, to keep the body clean. Now, we're talking physically. You want to keep it clean in other ways, too, both inside and out. And he, of course, tied that with what you eat, but also with things like brushing your teeth, although we don't have the little twigs like he had, you know, to brush your teeth with like they do in India, but brushing your teeth, bathing, all of that, important for your magnetism. And then association. This one is so great. I mean, satsang, you know, it runs through all of our teachings. We know that. We probably don't have to be convinced about it. But we should be sure to think of pilgrimage as satsang with the saints. I mean, how often do we get to be, especially now that Swami's left us, with really remarkably, you know, high souls? And we can do that through pilgrimage, because you go there and their vibrations are still there. And so this is a way to develop our own magnetism. So maybe you could say, having trouble get a job? Go to Assisi. Go to the pilgrimage in India. Come back and get a job. And of course, it's not quite that simple. You need to be working with that in the right way. But that's a key thing, which we may not always think of as we're thinking about having the magnetism of others rub off on us. And definitely with certain activities that we would like to get good at, or certain you know, specific goals we want to reach, if we'll mix with the people who have that, not just to learn from them in the things they say, but just vibrationally, you know, that will come, you know, really, it enters your body and your consciousness, and that's how it works. Of course, the not primary, but the most powerful tool that we have to become more magnetic is meditation. Yeah, absolutely. Gold star. With meditation, we're kind of going to the core of it, which again, in this class, we're not going to get into the astral body and chakras and all of that. But with meditation, we're able to go, it's actually not to the heart, because we're still just on the astral plane, really, when we're working with these things, with the astral body. But it's probably as far as any of us are going to get, you know, in the next few months. So by doing specific types of meditation techniques and breathing and other yogic techniques, we can increase our magnetism. But then we still need to go further and learn how more specifically to direct it. I mean, what we're doing with most of those techniques is that we're generating more energy. We're increasing our magnetism. But then there's also the whole business of how we apply it and how we focus it, either to bring us exactly what we want, or if we're pure enough, just to find God. You know, most of us are considering picking up a few other things along the way. And that's good too, if that's what we're going to do, how to do it in the most magnetic, dynamic and fastest way that we can. There's another part of the intake other than food, and it's probably even more important. And that's what we watch, what we listen to, what we read, and what we think about. Because our thoughts are a type of intake. We're generating those thoughts, and we take them in. And these are real battlegrounds for many of us, at least, I know, because we have all this stuff surrounding us everywhere. that are, it's not that it's all evil, and it's not even that it's all bad, but does it help us increase our magnetism and or help us to get the things that we want to get by our use of the magnetism? Television is an enormous one to consider. Music, you know, music, you can really, I can tell when I go into a store or especially a restaurant, oh my God, here I am, I'm eating food, which of course, when you're eating, you're taking in the vibrations around you more than anything else. And here's hip hop on, you know, in a pizza studio, you know, where I'm going to get relatively pure food. At least it's mostly vegetables, and I can get my tapioca cheese and all. But that's good intake, and then they put that on me, you know, and I'm taking that in too. But at least there you can go and say, okay, can I have a box? And I think I'm going to eat this somewhere else. But those are just all really important considerations as we live our lives. You know, what is coming into us through our senses? And it can be subtle. We just have to be really aware. Maybe we really should only go to movies that have happy endings, you know? I mean, then you're not cool anymore, you know? Or, you know, you're not going to the movies that the critics have put at the top of their list, perhaps. But, you know, there's those kinds of decisions for us to make. Positive thinking. Yogananda was kind of way ahead of his time. He just hammered it away at that, the whole concept of positive thoughts. And now, of course, there's been two or three waves of movements about positive thinking and how it's essential to help you reach your goals. As I said, the key, really the kind of the heartstone for us is all of our different yogic techniques. And energization is certainly one that most of us could probably give a higher priority to, because there we're doing the very same thing as we do with the electromagnetic motor, or, you know, magnetizing that piece of iron, because we're taking the energy, and to the degree we can do it, we're moving it into individual body parts. We're taking it through the body to get to that part, and then we're controlling it where it is. I mean, it's really pretty fantastic if you were saying it to somebody who hadn't been doing it. I mean, literally fantastic, you know, like fantasy kind of thing. I was telling a healthcare practitioner, oh yeah, we divide our back into six different parts, and then we learn to control the muscles in each of those six parts independently from, you know, the other five. Just going, wow, okay, pretty good, pretty good. But just not what, you know, she was expecting, I guess. So this is really the core. If we want to increase our magnetism, what we want to do is stay focused on those as well as all the rest of it. There we are.
Wonderful story, very relevant to what Ramurti was just talking about. I've had to get involved with this computer company, software company called MindBody, that is known around the world probably for handling yoga centers, very specific to that. And at the same time, I've had to be involved with another company, which will go nameless right now, that's also a world-renowned company, but they're selling a product that they have really been a thorn in my side for the last few weeks as we're trying to make some changes in our yoga studio. But MindBody has really been remarkable. They have great customer service, just great people. So today I was on hold with MindBody, and suddenly this lovely voice comes on, and it says, "We know that no matter how carefully we choose this music and how thoughtful we are about it, that some of you would rather not listen to music while you're on hold. So if you want to not hear music now, press the pound key." And the music goes away. And it just was so, it was so magnetic and so uplifting. Really, isn't that remarkable? Thoughtfulness and sensitivity, and it's an interesting thing because, of course, you can imagine if a company does that, they do so many other things that just make you want to do business with them, and they're so good at it. I was really touched by that. One of the things that was striking me as Ramurti was speaking, and I really want to encourage everybody to take that 3-week class, because the absolute truth is we can talk about all of these qualities, every one of them are important. We can talk and talk and talk. If we don't develop our magnetism in the right direction, right, intent with the right intention and direction, we're not going anywhere on the spiritual path. It's such an essential component. I've told some of you this, but I know for years when I first moved into the community, and I had been speaking literally all over the country and in various places in the world for decades before I moved into the community. Everybody wanted me to come here and teach right away. And the people who knew about it, Asha used to talk to me about it a lot, and I just kept saying, no, I'm not ready to teach here. And one of the things was that I knew that I was not deeply enough attuned to the vibration of these masters. So I could go out in the world and speak, that was one thing, but in the church, now I actually started at the East West, which is a totally different environment. But I knew that I needed to become more conscious of where that attunement was and magnetism. And Asha used to say to me all the time, it doesn't really matter, she didn't mean this, it doesn't matter at all, but what you say, how well prepared you are, exactly whether you make every point that you think you need to make. She kept saying to me, as long as you have good magnetism, and was saying to me, you do, so get up and teach. And you know, it took me years to understand. But I mean, case in point, here was Ramurti, who's just standing up here, and this matters. He's uplifted, he's using his arms like this, he's literally a smile on his face. Now he said, of course, very important things, but he didn't make every point he wanted to make. He couldn't tell every story. We were aware he was watching himself for time. It didn't matter at all. Everybody is wide awake, everybody was focused on what he was saying. He had everybody's attention and had their energy up. And that's magnetism. That's so far beyond. Believe me, he prepared enough to give 3 hours worth of a talk right now. I know that for sure. But it didn't matter at all. We're going to leave here feeling really uplifted because of who he was, how he presented. And that's what magnetism is. In the end, I could say to you, because I get to come after him, so I could fill in some blanks here, you know, we are really literally talking about magnetic qualities, positive and negative poles, what we attract, what we repel. And we're talking about how to consciously, thoughtfully, actively, energetically take charge of that in our lives. How are we going to go about making sure that we are drawing to ourselves the energy that we want, avoiding the energy that we don't want, and then doing the right thing with it? This is, really, it is the whole story of the chakras. And you know, it's very hard to talk about. I remember, just like Ramurti was just saying, he was trying to explain to some medical person that we really control 6 parts of our back, and they're looking, saying, oh yeah, first of all, who can do that? And second of all, what's the good? Why would you spend your life doing that? You know that's what's going on. I remember when I was giving a talk at SRW this year, I was up there and the talk actually came out completely other than how it was planned. But I said, can you imagine? We get up and we try and say to people in the world, look, this is a little hard to get, but there's really a spine within our spine. You can't see it. You can't document it. There's no way you can really get your eyes on it. But believe me, it's there. And you know what? Hey, there are these little vortices of energy and it's swirling around. You know, before you know it, people want to lock you up somewhere. You know, you just can't explain these things to people that are literally affecting, impacting, guiding, directing every experience we have. Every experience. You can't get away from it. It's not some of the time, some of the experience, because we are pure energy living in a sea of pure energy. And it's not just things. This is where it gets really complicated that Ramurti alluded to. It's every thought we have. It's looking at somebody and commenting in your mind about what they're wearing, what their body type is, whether you like their glasses. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's having a huge impact. It's having my grandmother, who was from Romania, and you know, she was this Eastern European, absolutely the most lovable human being in the world, but an Eastern European Jew. And I would say, "Granny, you can't talk like that," she'd say to me. "Honey, I didn't say a word. I didn't say a word." I said, "Granny, first of all, you did, but you're thinking it and it's all over your face." And she would just want to behave like it wasn't affecting anybody or anything. And it was affecting everybody and everything. Somehow intuitively, I knew that, even though I didn't have these words for it. But it's really remarkable. You know, when we think, like we have this conversation that we had before class, and we're talking about problems in our life, issues in our lives, these aspects that we're working on, and then stories come out. Why? Because you have a brother who's a little bit of a problem, or a sister, or a boss, or whatever. And I run into this in my medical practice all the time. Most of you know I do really essentially spiritual coaching. It's a little psycho-spiritual, and it doesn't matter to me what the person comes to me with. Sometimes they're medical problems, sometimes they're emotional, sometimes they're spiritual. It matters to them. And of course, I listen to their story, but I'm mostly listening to their story, asking them a lot of questions to get a feel for them. And I often say to them, I write a prescription. Here's a prescription. You have to drive up to Skyline Drive. Some of you have heard me say this, and you have to paint for an hour a week. Or you have to write three things in the morning that you're grateful for. I'm just thinking of simple examples. It doesn't matter. These are often my prescriptions. And then they'll say to me at the end of the hour, "Okay, I'll do this, but what am I going to do to get better?" Like they have no idea. And I mean, I don't want to make fun of everybody. It takes a while. But I say to them, "Bear with me, okay?" Sometimes I even put a wager on it. But usually I just say, "Bear with me." It doesn't look to you like we're fixing the problem. But the truth is, most of the time, you cannot go right at the problem and fix it. And the reason that you can't do that is because as soon as you try and fix it, which means what? Have an argument with your boss or try and talk somebody into something that you believe, but they don't believe, even a spouse that you love, whatever it is, you've already lowered your energy, you've decreased your magnetism, you're engaging them on their level, and it never works. It never works. I wish I could have known this when I was 15 and not 65, or I should say now 18 and not 68, because it never works. But what works? You think you're having trouble at home, you come to a kirtan, or you take a meditation class, or you change the music that is playing in your home. And literally, it is affecting not just every cell in your body. No, we found out this summer when we were at these talks, and I mean this, I mean, I want us to hear this, that the smallest particles that are being affected in our body are to a cell what a cell is to our whole physical being, billions of times smaller. And everything that we subject ourselves to, just like what Ramurti was saying, the music that we hear, the people that we're around, the colors that we wear, the fragrances we put on. And I mean this, you can't overestimate this. The amount of time we spend with certain people in the world as opposed to beginning to limit that. Or if we can't limit that, at least making sure we move ourselves into more positive places at times, affects every aspect of our being. And that is the way we heal. That is literally what we do. We don't go after it. I got this more, honestly, reading about magnetism in preparation for tonight, because I've always used that image of a jack-in-the-box, because it's true. In life, you approach a problem, you push it down here, it pops up here. You push it down there. You have moments of relief, which is what Master says is what most people call happiness. Those moments in between suffering, we call that happiness. Not on this path, we don't. But what we need to learn is we can't go at it from that angle. You can't approach. Swamiji says, I don't have this right in my mind because I haven't read it for a while, but he basically says, if you do that, you will spend lifetime after lifetime after lifetime just going after the problem. What we need to do is figure out how are we going to get our energy from being centered down around here in our lower chakras, because that's what it is. It's a flow of energy. And how are we going to bring the energy up here? And not just the route, because maybe everybody in this room already knows, yeah, that's what it has to happen. It's going to just climb that spiral staircase that Swami writes about and move up the chakras. And as it's moving, neutralize energy. It literally does that so that there's no pull outward or downward. There's no longer a positive and a negative. It's neutralized. It's one. And as it gets to be one, in one chakra after another after another, we find ourselves feeling more calm, being healthier, suddenly not having arguments, maybe suddenly losing weight that we couldn't lose. Our voices change. The way we perceive everything in the world changes. It's dramatic. And all we've done is work inwardly, not try and approach things out. But it's outside. But it's not just approaching them inwardly. It's approaching them inwardly with great energy, great concentration, deep desire and commitment to always be moving in the right direction. Master said, and we've heard it over and over, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. This is, you know, Swamiji wrote last week, I didn't speak about willpower, which was one of the qualities, but you all know, literally, this is what he wrote about willpower, from here to here. Willpower, for goodness sake. I mean, I would have thought it would have been most of the lesson, but it's not. Because basically, what does he say? He says, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. Do it with great intention, great commitment, and make sure you're headed in the right direction. Make sure that whenever you're applying energy, just in the form, not physically, but in the form of saying yes. It's so powerful to say yes. Why is that? Because that is a word literally that magnetizes energy in an upward direction. No does not. Not that no can never be good, but it's a limiting sort of ending kind of thing. It's not that we never need to do it. Of course, Sita was just telling us Sita's just retired. She says the first time in her life she didn't have any structure. I hope this is okay. But she says, oh, I'm just sitting there right now and I know I have to say no to everything. But the way she's saying no, and she's not saying no to everything, but to a lot, she's saying it with the intention of growing, expanding, healing, becoming. So again, intention matters. I don't mean that we never say no, but when you think of it, and you think of that way that Swamiji used to say, when you say yes, or you say, I'm feeling up, and I'm feeling so high today, you don't walk around like this. You don't say, gee, I really feel great. You know, then you say to somebody, you don't look like you feel great. What's going on? Nothing. Why do you ask? Because everything about you says you're not okay. When I said before, I spend much more time taking a history from people than I really need in terms of the history and the things they're telling me. But it gives me so much of an opportunity to just feel their energy. Where is it? What are they doing with it? How have they learned to direct it or not? So more than anything else, what we're talking about here is applying willpower, is deciding that we're serious about something, that we're going to make a commitment. It might just be a commitment that takes us the tiniest way. It's not how far we go that matters. This is not a competitive sport. None of the ways that we're used to thinking of ourselves in the world matter. We cannot compare ourselves to even one other human being in this way. We can't. It's a problem. It'll get us into trouble. What our next step is could be exactly in the opposite direction of where somebody else's is. I didn't get to say this in Sunday service a couple of weeks ago, but Ramurti and I were both giving services. I was here. He was in Scotts Valley, I think, but wherever. And he said to me the day before that service, and this is so relevant right now, he said it's like the story that I think he said Swamiji told, but I never heard it. Ramurti's now my Swamiji. That he said, you know, you meet your master, and he says to you, go north. And go north until you cross the equator. Well, you don't know where the equator is, so you keep going north. Then you meet the next master, and he says, no, to get to your goal, you have to turn around and walk south. And, you know, you could think they're nuts. They're telling you two different things. But it's because we don't always know where in the world we are, and we're certainly not in the world where anybody else is. So we have to really tune in and then apply willpower to move ourselves forward. And literally, when you start getting this, you realize that all of that list that Ramurti just went through, but doing it with focused intention, concentration, dedication, devotion, it's all we need to get well. We really don't have to figure out. I remember the moment it came to me in my relationship at home with my husband, who, again, some of you just heard this, but I mean, I adore him. I'm with him 30 years. We're in the best place we've ever been in. I mean, everything's just getting better and better and better. Not because it was bad, but I mean, because we're growing. But the moment that I realized that I never wanted to argue with him again, that we had been arguing about the same things for 20 years. Nothing was really different. He was still who he is. I was still who I was. And he would say to me, if you want me to get it, explain it to me. And I would think, no, I've been explaining it for 20 years. I ran out of words. You know, but it's true. We've all been there. I know we've all been there. And I realized that what I needed to do was come inside and change my energy, that I couldn't agree again to meet him in that place, that I had to say, like little kids do, but I was going to do it this way. I was going to do, I would watch what was going on at home, and I would have a constant chant of om. And it's funny, but you know what? I did it. And I don't want to take anything away from Barry because he's been doing his part too, but it's worked. It's absolutely worked. It has changed our lives. And 20 years of talking, I'd do anything in the world to go back and change it right now. 20 years I tried to talk my way through this. No, I needed to change my energy. And that's what we're talking about. I needed to change my magnetism so that I was drawing something else into that space, into that room, into that relationship. All the time it's applicable. I'm just sharing stories, but every place we are in the world, every customer service person we deal with, every sales agent, everything, watch it. Open your heart. Smile. Have you ever been in a conversation with three people when the person would only look at you, they won't look at the other person? Makes me crazy. But it happens a lot. And I have found that if Caitlin and Linda and I are talking, but we're just talking, if I look at Linda and smile, Caitlin suddenly looks over at Linda and starts engaging her in the conversation. Why is that? We're literally magnetizing. We have all of this within our control. All those things matter, but I'm telling you, if we did nothing more than stand up straight and open our hearts, just the way we're taught to sit and meditate, our lives would start changing. It honestly is that simple. Now, why does all this matter anyway? Why are we even talking about magnetism? Because we're yogis. And because we are trying to get to be at a state of deep inner peace at a state of feeling like we're one with everyone, that no matter who we're talking to, where we are, what situation we're in, that we're aware of the divine presence in ourselves and in each other. That's really what we want. Once we get there, we're there. Once we get there, we're no longer roiling around in our first and second chakras. It's not what's happening. You know, I was surprised the strength with which in this lesson, I can't quote him, but you read it, Swamiji says, avoid at any cost moving into a relationship with people who are centered, he says, in their second chakra. He says it's dangerous. He said that raw sexuality, he doesn't even call it sensuality, he said it might draw you, but it's nothing but bad energy. Well, you know, that's a hard lesson to try and share with everybody. Easy for me to say at 68, harder if somebody would have tried to tell me that at 28. But I mean, now I can read it. And then he goes on to talk about trying to notice, to become aware of people who are centered in their first chakra and how negative and downward pulling it's stuck and what the energy's like. So this is not a class on the chakras, just like there's more to say about everything. But when you feel drawn to somebody's heart, when you love their eyes, just like Ramurti was saying, when you feel like you want to step into them from the waist up, go for it. And I mean, I'm just saying that, but it's absolutely true. That's the draw that we want to be paying attention to now. I want to just take the last 5 minutes and 5 minutes about inspiration, but there you have it. Let's hope that we've been practicing that a little bit right now. In some way, the point of this is because where we want to be, when we say we want to be centered at the point between the eyebrows, we want to be living our lives from a place that we can receive divine inspiration about everything all the time, that we're no longer moving based on our own whims, our own likes and dislikes, our own fantasies. I mean, every one of us in this room could stand up and give a lecture about where that's gotten us. And it probably wouldn't be always necessarily uplifted discussion. We've already had our experience and our opportunity to do that. Now, we would like to, I remember when I left this, I had this huge, very successful, very wonderful medical practice, third largest practice in the entire United States. I had a love affair going on. I had 6,000 patients, but to be honest, probably only 4,000 of them and I had a mutual love affair going on, but it was beautiful. I went to work 16 hours a day, loved every minute of it, and then it was time for me to leave. I didn't know, but it's because I had to come back and move into the community. I didn't understand that, but that was the truth. But over and over and over, people would say to me, this was in Baltimore in 1999, what are you going to do? What are you going to do next, though? These are other doctors and nurses. They were totally freaked. That first of all, that I was leaving, they literally asked me if I wanted to talk to a therapist first. Nobody could believe that I would leave that life. But the fact that I was getting into my Jetta with as much stuff as I could fit into my Jetta with no other plan, which is what I did, no plan. I did not even have a cooler in my car. I had a Coleman stove so I could heat instant soups. This is a true story. I lived like that for a year. And I mean, I was no kid. I was 50. But I realized as people started asking me that question, and this is the lesson, this is what we're aiming for, I said to them, I don't want to find that answer in me. I don't want Shanti to answer that question. I want to go wherever I need to go to get quiet enough and still enough so that I hear the answer. I knew enough to say that. I was blessed. That was grace because I could never have put these words around it, but that was the truth. That was aiming for truth, looking for truth. That was deciding that I was going to be inspired, not I was going to get Shanti out of the way, and I was going to listen, and I was quiet. I know you all find this hard to believe, but for a year, I was quiet. Honestly, about three times in that year, I stopped at my brother's for a week, another brother, one friend, mostly to get a good shower and a really hot meal. But I mean this when I'm telling you, I lived with peanut butter and bread and instant soups and cheese for a year just with myself and with God. And I sat there until I was told what to do. And, I mean, here you have the rest of the story. You've all seen it. It was pure grace. But that's what we want. We want to raise our magnetism, put ourselves in a place of positive energy. Nothing was pulling me down. I traveled all around the country. It was beautiful. No music. Nothing. Not stepping in to what Ramurti's describing. That's not just good food. That's all organic. It's all sustainably grown. That's the best pizza imaginable. But you can't bear the music in there. It's true. I had none of that. And because of that, and I'm telling you, I didn't know, I take no credit for this, my energy could be raised to the point where God could work with me. And that's what we want. We cannot get to the point of inspiration as long as we're either in the way or we're not fully inviting it sincerely to whatever degree we're blocked. Ramurti mentioned all those words, self-doubt, fear, greed, low self-esteem. You could just fill in all those blanks. Of course we all have that. Of course, we're not saying we're perfect. We're right here. We're talking about the goal. We're talking about where we're headed. Any of that gets in the way of being able to allow this divine energy to work with our energy. It's got to be uplifted. It's got to be open. It's got to be willing. It's got to be inviting. That is magnetic. You can feel it even as I stand up here with my arms like this. It's uplifting. And then that divine, superconscious omnipresence knows, now I can work with her. You remember what Master said one day? Just the Swamiji was feeling a little bit like, look how far I've come. He hears Master say to one of the other monks, look at what I've done for Walter. You know, just saying, Walter didn't do it. But what we can do is we can put ourselves in the position, and we can do that by increasing, expanding our magnetism. And I would say, and I meant this, these are not shortcuts, this is the path that you learn to stand. I remember once when I was mentoring somebody who was starting to teach, and they would sit down and be very quiet. I said, no, stand up, open your eyes, use your facial expression, because then you're drawing your energy here. Your whole energy goes where you put your attention, and this is what it's about. And then when that happens in ways that we will never understand, because it's all beyond mind, we won't get it. Suddenly we know something beyond a shadow of a doubt. Suddenly we create a meal that we didn't know how it was coming. We didn't even know what we were going to do with those ingredients. Or we start drawing and we didn't know we could draw. There's so many ways. We teach a class and we had no idea what we were going to say before. All it has to do with us is really doing what we can do to stay uplifted, positive, increasing our will, increasing our flow of energy. And then, as Master says in the energization exercises, tense with will, relax and feel. Once we have our energy up here, we just say, okay, you do the rest. Okay, now I'm going to be as good as Ramurti. I think I've been 29.5 minutes. This is our last night, so let me just say, it's 9 o'clock. We've both done our jobs. Does anybody have any comments, questions, anything? I feel inspired by these Akash lessons in a way that I haven't before. And I'm sure the lessons didn't change. So, means something about what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years. Yeah, I'm glad, Chandra. Thank you for saying that. I think I really deeply appreciate about 3 classes ago when everybody started saying more interaction, and I think it really shifted the energy. It's exactly the way these classes need to be taught. It's what Swamiji meant. So I think the first couple of classes were really good, but I think something happened to pull it all together because Swamiji was saying, take these out and teach teachers, and you can't just do that pouring energy at somebody. So I think you were there, and I appreciate that feedback. It's really useful. Tandava. And I think they're all right there. Yeah. I'm going to repeat what you said just because I want to make sure. It won't go in there if I don't repeat it, will it, Vinny? No. So I just want to, you know what? In fact, I'm going to just for 1 minute give the mic. Oh, good. Tondeva, would you, I'm sorry, do you mind? I'd love to have that because I feel that deeply too. So,
what I was saying was along the lines of one of the exercises, which was to just take the keywords and put them on our walls where you could see them all the time, is I really like having this, is this list on the camera? On the whiteboard here of all the topics in order from the whole series, because it's a way of keeping them all in front of us at the same time, but also seeing how they all relate and how as you work on one, it feeds into the others. And it's actually just sort of a fun exercise to think about how they relate that way.
Yeah, I feel that also. I think that really came out in our discussion earlier tonight. But what I keep feeling, and it's embarrassing to say this. I might even be rude to Swamiji, but when I look at that, I think, oh my God, he was so brilliant. It's just amazing that not only did he do these qualities, but in the order he did them, and then set it out there in a way that we could get. Look at that. You cannot be one without the other. They're all going to move. They're all going to change. I feel so touched by Swamiji in these weeks right now, sharing these lessons and listening. Everybody who taught just did such a beautiful job. And I just feel so grateful to Swami. It's really what I'm feeling. Anybody else? Okay, well, thank you all. This was really wonderful. Next week, abundance.